Before a store succeeded, R.H. Macy had seven different failures. Babe Ruth, we probably remember him as far as his home runs. He had 714 home runs. But when you think about Ruth, do you remember the 1,330 times that he struck out? When you look at people in life who have had great success, and there certainly have been a number of them, you find that along the way, oftentimes, there have been some failures. Not only might there be some failures along the way, there might be some great failures. If failures are not in a person's occupation or profession, they might be in the home. As people become parents with a new child, they begin to find that they experience some new things. And one of the new things that a parent might experience is guilt. We're going to this morning talk about mom's guilt. I do not know when mom's guilt became a thing, when people first began to talk about it as far as some kind of syndrome or problem. I do know that it has been around for a long time. If you check out dad guilt, that's also a thing. Doesn't seem like it's been as prominent or around as long as mom guilt, but it does get a lot less attention. Since today is Mother's Day, we're glad that several mothers are with us. We do want to think about mom guilt. Now, if you've never heard about mom guilt, or you're thinking, well, what exactly is that? Let's see if we can pull up a somewhat formal definition. Whether you've never heard of mom guilt or can't escape its relentless grip, it simply means that pervasive feeling of not doing enough as a parent, not doing things right, or making decisions that may quote-unquote mess up your kids in the long run. Now, as you look at the definition here for mom's guilt, it does sound like it is a pretty serious problem. And if society has a day which honors mother, and today we know that that is the case, then as you think about today, Mother's Day, it might be a day where as mothers reflect on their work, current, present, and maybe future, it might be a day which amplifies mom's guilt. We want to see if we can find some Bible information about mom guilt. And we're going to start with what Paul wrote to Timothy, 1 Timothy chapter 4. In 1 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 2, Paul said, "Through the hypocrisy of men that speak lies, branded or seared in their conscience as with a hot iron." Perhaps if you've cooked or you've watched someone who has cooked, you have seen them sear food. They cook it for a while on this side and then they flip it over on high heat and they cook the other side for a bit to sear the food to seal in the juices. Or maybe you've had an accident. You were ironing something, you had something that was hot, and that touched your skin, and you found that that seared your skin. God uses the word sear to say that the conscience can be seared. He says it is possible for the conscience to be scarred. It's possible for the conscience to be so severely damaged. It's hardened to the point where things no longer register. When the conscience is seared, when the conscience is affected in this kind of way, then people do not begin to process things in the right way. They're incapable of processing things in the right way. And they do not see wrong or evil as they should. If a woman has guilt, if a female has mom guilt, then that should be a strong indicator that the person, the woman, the female, does not have a seared conscience, and that is a good thing. Being sensitive to a problem is good, because there actually might be a problem. Being too sensitive can also be a problem, but there is that mid-range, and that's what the Bible encourages us to strive for. When Paul wrote to this young preacher, he gave him some helpful information, but as we think about mom guilt, Paul is not the only inspired author who gives us some assistance. We can also turn over to the book of James, James chapter 3 and verse 2. James said, "For in many things, in a lot of different ways, he said, we all stumble. Not in word, the same is a perfect man, able to bridle the whole body also." As you look at James chapter 3, James talking about speech. And he says when it comes to the tongue, when it talks about the ways that we communicate with others, we often fail. We often mess up. We all stumble. There's not a single one of us that's flawless. And James says not only do we mess up, but he said we mess up, we stumble in many different ways, in a lot of different aspects of life. I suspect that as parents have their first child, they bring home the baby from the hospital, perhaps even before the child is born. There are parents who think we're going to do our best to be the perfect parent. We're never going to make any big mistakes with our kids. We may not have everything figured out, but we're going to do very, very well, we hope and trust. But as the years begin to pass, as those years begin to mount, parents usually begin to understand that what they saw as so important in those early years, what seemed to be so crucial and critical in those formative years, and this is true for marriage as well, as the years go by, what seems so important all the way back here is now, perhaps if not inconsequential, far less significant. For example, if you look at new parents, you might find that there is a lot of thought, there is a lot of discussion given to when is our baby going to get his or her first haircut. Now, after the child is 18 or 30, you're probably not thinking about that memory anymore. But when that child is just a few weeks or a few months old, that can be a big deal. If we have a daughter, are we going to let our daughter, or when will we let our daughter have her ears pierced? That can be a big topic for conversation. Or there's this one, especially with the first child. Mom is treating the child like something that is extremely fragile. Dad begins to bounce the baby on the knee and toss the child around a little bit, and mom is thinking, you are dangerous with a baby. Give her back to me. Or this, what experts should we consult? Who are the people that we should look to? What sources should we use to guide us as we rear this child? As children begin to grow and mature, as they get older and older, the decisions become more difficult. The decision about the first haircut begins to fade away and perhaps even die compared to some of the later decisions in life. Where is our child going to go to school? All of a sudden, that decision makes that haircut decision pale in comparison. Or when the child is old enough to be disciplined, when the child is old enough to be punished for bad behavior, those decisions have a far greater consequence than some of the other things in the early years. Or what about decisions concerning liberties and privileges, freedoms? Now, you might be wondering, if you looked at the slide for a minute, I've got some numbers there at the bottom, and you might be thinking, what do those refer to? Well, let's explain those now. 365, I put that up on the screen because that is the number of days that we have in a year. If we think about children living in a home, I'm going to use the number 18 to say 18 years. If you take 365, the number of days, times 18, the number of years that we're using for an average, that means that to raise a child, the child is going to be in the home, the child is going to be under the care of the parent for 6,570 days. Now, maybe it's a little longer than that, maybe it's a little less than that, but that's going to be the average. Now, here's my question. How many decisions do you think a parent is going to make over those 6,570 days? I'll help you out a little bit. Let's say, to be conservative, that over those days, on the average, a parent makes 5 decisions. Now, I suspect that there are several more than that, but let's just use that conservative number. If a parent, 365 days times 18 years, 5 decisions a day, that comes up to 32,850 decisions. If you have raised a child, you have made likely at least that many decisions and far more. Someone says, well, we didn't have a child. We had 3. Well, good for you. And if you had 3 children, guess what? You have likely made, if your third child is now out of the house, you have likely made well over 100,000 decisions in raising those 3 children. Now, suppose, thinking about things as far as numbers, suppose that we had only 1 child. And let's say, for the sake of our illustration, that this child was just super easy to raise. Very, very few things came up that were especially challenging. Even if that were true, under the very best circumstances, we as a parent still would have made, over the life of that child, getting that child through school and out of the house, we still would have made in excess of 32,000 decisions. Now, when you look at 32,000 decisions, somewhere along the road, you're going to make some decisions which are difficult. There are going to be some choices which are not easy. There are going to be times where you're called upon to make a decision which is perhaps not only difficult, but maybe you're called upon to make a decision with limited information. You want more facts. You want more data. You say, it's really harder to decide because I have so little information. Well, you have to act on what you have. Or someone else says, you're asking me to make a snap decision. I'd really like to sleep on this one. I'd like to think about it for a week, a month, at least overnight. But no, we have to make the decision right now. Is it this way or is it that way? When we are called on to make those kinds of decisions, hopefully we get it right. But sometimes we don't. As parents, as human beings, we are definitely going to get it wrong on some occasions. We might not only get it wrong, we might find out immediately or a little later that we were very wrong. Most people become parents and they do not give a lot of consideration to the fact that because they believe they're going to be really good parents, that they're really going to mess up, that they're really going to blow it at some point in those 30,000 plus decisions. James, again, look at it. He says, for in many things we, that's the whole group of accountable people, for in many things, many ways, we all stumble. We all fail. And that's true when we think about parents and how they deal with their children. Even when it comes to speech, which is James' point in James chapter 3, we might be too harsh on some occasions. We might be too gentle. We should have been firmer. Sometimes we fail. Rather than focus on what may have been, or rather than focus on perhaps what actually were mistakes, Christians are people who need to have a different view. It is the view that Paul describes in 2 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 7. He said, I have fought. I have fought the good fight. I have finished the course. And then he says, point number 3, I've kept the faith. As you know about the Apostle Paul, from our studies in previous times, he'd preached for a long time. Preached in a lot of different places. He spent a good part of his life preaching the gospel. As Paul comes to the end of his life, he talks to this young preacher. He's trying to give the young man some advice. And he says, I want you to look at me and think about my life. He says, I have fought the good fight. In spite of fighting the good fight, Paul says, there are times in my life where I failed. If we think back to where we were just a minute ago, James chapter 3, Paul failed in many ways. He stumbled in many ways. He didn't always get it right. But he was, as we look at 2 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 7, he was committed to doing the very best that he could. As we think about parents, and especially as we think about mothers on this day, a similar thing is true for them. If you are a mom and you've been a mom for very long, you know that you have some days like Babe Ruth. And I'm not talking about home run days. I'm talking about days where you feel like, or perhaps you look at the day and you say, I struck out today. And it might be that you have a week or perhaps an extended period where you think, I'm not getting any home runs. I'm not even getting on base. I feel like a complete flop. Rather than putting away the bat and saying, I quit, good moms know that another day is going to come. Today, we might not have even gotten to first base, but tomorrow may not be the best hit, but we'll at least have a base hit and maybe a home run. Going back to just a moment and thinking about Mr. Macy, life, even perhaps for an extended period of time, remember, 7 different failures, and yet he didn't give up. He persisted, and in the end, he prevailed. So as a parent, it might not be that this year is good, or maybe even next year, or maybe we have a decade that's bad, or a few decades, but Paul said, fight the good fight of faith. As we think about being a parent, sometimes it does seem like it is a battle. As we look at children, regardless of whether they are a good child or a challenging child, children can be difficult to deal with. As parents, commit to the task at hand. Commit to it. Don't quit. Paul said he finished the course. And as parents, that is the same responsibility that we have. We start the process and we need to complete the process. There is a sense in which a parent never ceases to be a parent. But the Bible also teaches that there is a relationship, a child-parent relationship, which needs to change with time. Jesus made that clear in Matthew chapter 19 and verse 5 when he said, for this cause shall a man leave his father and mother and shall cleave to his wife. The time does come when young people need to leave the house. The time does come where kids mature to the point where they need to go and create their own lives, perhaps even form their own family. Every parent needs to know that it is God's will for them to complete the course when it comes to parenting. And part of that course is doing the parental best to keep the faith and pass along that faith. Ideally, every single child will be taught about God's will, what God wants him or her to do with his or her life. And that part of parenting is just as critical, just as important as any other part. If parents live in this way, then they can be like Paul. In Acts chapter 23 and verse 1, we're looking at this in the adult class right now on Sunday mornings. Paul, as he's before the Jewish Supreme Court, the Sanhedrin, he said, he's looking steadfastly on this council, on the court, and he says, brethren, I have lived before God in all good conscience until this day. Now imagine that. Standing before people who were not friendly to his cause, standing before people who were opposed to him, and Paul said, I want you to know that if you could look inside my head, if you could see my conscience, I've done my very best. I have tried to live my life right before God. Now, is Paul saying he was a sinless man? Oh, no. He was a sinner. He had sinned a lot. He was that great persecutor of the church. Yet, as Paul looks at these people, he knows that he stumbled in many ways, James chapter 3. But still, he says, I was trying to do the best that I could. And that's also true for parents, at least most of them. When we look at moms, most of them try as hard as they can. And do perhaps more than they probably should or feel like they could. And yet, on some occasions, as hard, as often, as diligently as a mother tries, she sometimes does not get things right. She misses the boat. Well, that's a logical conclusion and a logical state because as human beings, we are finite creatures. There are some things in life that we simply cannot know and do not know. There are parents, and this is sad, but it's true. There are parents who suffer tragedy with their children, and they literally spend the rest of their life asking questions like this. How could I? How could I as the dad? How could I as the mom? Living with this child day after day, how could I not have known? And then you can just fill in the blank. Parents beat themselves up. As parents look at a situation, they may suffer lasting guilt because they did not prevent some evil or some tragedy from affecting the child. How could we not have known? Again, we are finite creatures. There are some things that we simply cannot know. We cannot stop all evil. When it comes to mom guilt, and even dad guilt, if you want to factor him in here, sometimes it comes down to the PPI, the personal pronoun I. It is oftentimes so tempting to make life about us, even if we don't intend to. People may look at the needs of the family or the children and think, how am I going to get this? How am I going to do that? How am I going to accomplish all these things? What can I do to make things better? When the I fails, and it will often fail if we are relying on our own strength, we need to turn to God versus self. The Christian has an all-powerful and very resourceful tool. Learn to rely more on God and less on self at all times in life, but especially during those years of parenting. People want to be good. People want to be great parents. And sometimes they look at their lives and think, well, I have really done well. I'm doing so well with my children. Remember this. We're all guilty of sin. Romans chapter 3, verses 10 and 23, Paul said, there is none righteous, no, not one. And then when it comes to good, we have our definition for good, and maybe that's a good definition as far as people. But Jesus, when he was talking about good, he said in Matthew chapter 19 and verse 17, he said, there is only one truly good person. And that person is not a human being. He said that person is God. Only God is truly good. When parents become parents, when people become parents, they will not always get it right. And as we think about what Jesus says here, we are reminded of the fact that we are oftentimes not nearly as good as we may think or as others say. In spite of all of our parenting errors, in spite of all of our parenting mistakes, and each person will make at least some, the Bible talks about grace. And in Romans chapter 5, you can start at verse 2 and go down through verse 17. Paul talks about standing in the grace of God. And that is a great thing for any person who is a Christian, but especially for a Christian parent. What a Christian parent feels guilty about concerning different things in life, things that are happening, things that didn't happen, things that perhaps will happen, ultimately they may be of little to no concern to the children. And as the years go by, time begins to march on. Sometimes those issues begin to fade as far as parental guilt. But in cases where that guilt has been established and that guilt seems to persist, the Bible has a solution. And that solution is in 1 John chapter 1 and verse 7. We know the verse well. But if we, who are the we? Well, they would include the people who stumble in many things. They would include the people who have parental guilt. But if we will walk in the light, if we will do our best to live the Christian life, as he is in the light, we will have fellowship one with another, and the blood of Christ cleanses us from all sin. It needs to wipe away that guilt. Not all mom guilt is based on sin. And if there's guilt there for a reason other than sin, get rid of it. Let it go. Knowing that we are running the race that Paul was running, the same race, as we heard as far as the communion remarks that were made, wonderful remarks by Brian. As far as we're doing the same kind of thing that people have been doing for about 2,000 years. We're doing our best to live a life that's pleasing to God. We're all going to make mistakes along the way. But God reminds us that this is all part of the process. As a parent, take up that role, especially if we are dealing with older children. And realize that as that process continues, we are almost guaranteed to make a number of mistakes on the way. But in the end, think about Babe Ruth and think about Mr. Macy. 7 failures by Macy. And yet in the end, he prevailed. All those striking out times by Ruth. And yet, all those home runs as well. If you are a young person who has one or more parents who love you, you're blessed. And you need to know as you live your life, and certainly today, that they want the very best for you. They're not always going to get it right. And if you have that expectation, you need to rethink things. Their jobs are a lot harder than you may ever know. To all of our mothers, thank you for the work that you've done. Continue to do, and Lord willing, we'll continue to do. When you think about being a mom, if you can get to the end point where you say, okay, I've raised at least one child, and I can look back, and it has been a long journey. I have needed to be patient. I have needed to be persistent. There have been days where I was tempted to just give up, throw in the towel, did not know how I would get through tomorrow, but I made it. That's a great parallel for the Christian life. People, as they're going through the Christian life, they have different struggles and things are challenging and they're thinking, boy, today was hard. Maybe tomorrow's going to be a little bit better and tomorrow is even worse. And yet they persist. For the mom as well as the Christian, the payoff, some of that comes in the process, but the ultimate payoff is at the end. How blessed to be a mom who receives the payoff. But ultimately, how blessed to be a child of God who has gone through life doing his or her best to live that faithful Christian life, coming to the end and saying, now, it's all been worth it. This morning, that's our challenge to you, mom or not. Are you looking at life from that long, from that broad perspective where you can say, it is hard at times, but it is worth it. I'm in it. As far as fighting the good fight, I'm going to finish the course. I'm going to receive that crown. If not, because you've not become a Christian, this morning you can take the required steps, faith, repentance, confession, baptism, immersion into Christ for the forgiveness of every single sin, Acts 2 and verse 38. And then if you have taken those steps, but you become like a discouraged mom who has said, I just don't think I can continue. Can we offer you help to pray with you, encourage you, study with you, or support you in some other way as we stand and sing?